Good afternoon, everybody. I will call the meeting for the Education Finance Committee to order. We have a quorum, and with that, our first order of business will be to adopt the approve the minutes from last meeting on February 24th. Has anyone had a chance to look at the minutes and would like to make a motion? Representative Green.
Madam Chair, I would love to move those minutes for you.
Thank you, Representative Mueller. Representative Mueller moves minutes for February 24th. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed say no. The minutes for February 24th are adopted. With that, members, we have a few presentations today and some testifiers, so we'll dive right in. Our first presentation is from the Minnesota Department of Education on the calculation of average daily membership and compensatory aid. I know we've had a lot of questions about that from our school district, so I thought we'd bring them in. Will the testifiers please come to the table? And we have the Director of School Finance here, Kathy Erickson, and available for questions also Angela Mansfield and Adosh Uni. Once you get settled and get the PowerPoint set up, once you get settled, we will let you proceed. So please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kathy Erickson. I'm the Director of School Finance at the Minnesota Department of Education.
I'm sorry, could you pull that a little closer, please?
Sorry.
Oh, and members, also Mr. Strom has some handouts on both these issues in your packet. So go ahead, Ms. Erickson. Please introduce yourself again.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Kathy Erickson. I'm the Director of School Finance at the Minnesota Department of Education, and I have two colleagues here that will introduce themselves, I think.
Go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. I am Angela Mansfield, Assistant Commissioner of our Office of Educational Opportunity at MDE.
Thank you for being here today.
Hey. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Adosh Uni. I'm the Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education.
Thank you, and please proceed.
Good afternoon, members. I'm here today to give a high-level overview on how the 15-day drop rule happens for school funding. The 15-day drop actually has two impacts. One, it affects funding, and then secondly, for reporting through our Compass program and other areas to track students with attendance. So from a funding standpoint, we just wanted to share that students who do not attend 15 consecutive days in a row, their enrollment file drops. That means that they are no longer generating what we call average daily membership, or ADM. It is only until they re-enroll at that same LEA, school district charter, or other, that ADM will start regenerating. We wanted to make sure that folks understood that the 15 days is still paid, is still generating ADM. It's that 16th day that drops, and it is based on the instructional calendar of the year. So for example, I'll use the month of December. If a student stops attending December 1st, they will have 15 days of enrollment, even if they are not in attendance. And on that 16th day, which we used a sample school calendar, would get to around December 22nd. And then that same district had holiday and winter breaks. So for the month of December, they really only had 2 days of non-ADM enrollment. If they kept going into January, that sample calendar had 21 instructional days. So we would add another 21 instructional days of non-attendance, which would not be generating revenue. We used an example to get us to March 15th. This sample district would be 43 days of non-attendance and non-generation of ADM. And from there, taking that from a typical 165-day instructional calendar would leave that student, if they re-enrolled on March 15th and stayed until the end of the school year, would have 43 days of non-attendance, 122 days of attendance, and their ADM would be prorated to approximately 0.74. So they would have approximately 26% of their time would not be funded. I don't know if we pause for questions or if you just would like me to keep
Go ahead and keep going.
Okay.
We'll pause for questions after the ADM, after the ADM piece.
Great. We want to make sure folks recognize that the ADM only regenerates if they re-enroll back at the district where they started. We do know that students may unenroll from one district and enroll into a separate or new district. That then original district would not be then able to claim any additional ADM from that original 16th day for the drop. From a funding standpoint, from a cash flow standpoint, we've had some questions about when does the impact of the drops or the students who are unenrolled affect a school district. What we do is throughout the beginning of the year, we get all of our student counts that we base our aid entitlement fundings on from estimates from school districts, charters, and others. These are all estimates. At the end of December or early January, we close how we get those estimates, and we utilize that pupil estimate to determine the funding distributions for the rest of the school year. So school districts who may be seeing a loss of students through the 15-day drop, their cash flow will be what they estimated back in late December or beginning of January. So there is not necessarily an immediate reduction in revenues unless a district reaches out to MDE and has concerns that maybe their estimates are too high. They can request us to do an adjustment. But otherwise, we would do the reconciliation of the actual ADM at the end of the school year, which starts in August, and then we continue to make adjustments as we get those MARS reports. We've had some questions about when do we know when we see the number of 15-day drop pieces of information. From a funding standpoint, we use a system called MARS. And MARS reports are done. Our next MARS collection will be in March. And then our next, what we call statewide edit, will be in April, where we then measure enrollment records from all the districts to make sure we don't have students being multiple reported in multiple districts. And then we can see where we're seeing some of those, what we call those 15-day drops. But from another reporting standpoint, I'm going to turn it over to Assistant Commissioner Mansfield to talk about how they report through her division and the information about 15-day drops.
Assistant Commissioner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The legislation that passed last session requiring districts to, excuse me, the mic is not playing friendly. It's requiring districts to report students who have been 15-day dropped after each term. What happens is they report that list at the end of each term to their local welfare agency, likely the county. Then the county has a period of time where they're looking for those students with the contact information that the district last had. If they're unable to make contact with those students, they then return that list of students or help families if they are able to get in touch with them, re-enroll. They return that list to the district. Then there is an unaccounted for student form that we have at MDE that the district then sends the information for the students who they have not yet been able to make contact with. Information that we gather is student information, name, MARS number, last known contact information, and last known time that they had interaction with said student. And we keep that data. Right now, there wasn't specific information in that legislation as to how long that data should be kept. So we're just continuing to compile that information. That's it.
Thank you.
Madam Erickson? Chair, that is our summary for the 15-day drop. We noticed on the agenda if there was questions about compensatory, we would take questions on that, but we're open for questions now.
Yes, I'll have the first one then, too. I know we pay our schools on a 90-10 split for the first year and second year. So when you do those recalculations at the end of that school year, is it in the cleanup 10% payment that they'll see that differentiation?
Madam Chair, great question. The 10% is partially done because we know we're in 100% estimate mode during the school year. If a district or charter school is more than 10%, we would have to recapture additional funds with the current year funding to reconcile to the actual. But we also have districts who may estimate low, and we actually make more metered payments to get them to where they need to be. So it isn't always a take back, but oftentimes if they're doing really good on their estimates, then we are paying that additional 10% at the end. But we do want to encourage districts to monitor their enrollment right now, especially if they're seeing some volatility, because in the end, we will do those reconciliations starting August of 2026.
Thank you. I have Engen and then Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for the recognition. That means a lot. So I have a quick question here for you guys. I appreciate the presentation. I know we're in the Education Finance Committee, but sometimes we need to look at it from a holistic standpoint of the wellness of the student as well. And what I've heard anecdotally is cases of students being gone for 14 days and then showing up on the 15th and doing that repeatedly over and over again. And largely we don't know where these students are, if they're in a safe environment, if they're being treated well. Is there any data that the department has to back up those claims so we can try to get ahead of that curve, rather than looking at this just from a fiscal standpoint?
Who would like to answer that? Short story. No, go ahead, Assistant Commissioner.
Not it. No, excuse me. Thank you, Madam Chair. Currently, that's a hard ball to catch right now with the data systems that we have in place, because we depend so heavily on our MARS system, which is a lag data system. We're working right now on a modernization of the data systems that we have, and we're really behind on that, if I'm just quite honest. The exciting piece, though, we've had appropriations for, you may be familiar with our EdFi system. That's a very specific system that's in law to modernize what we have. And we are doing a big point push right now to fast track some of that modernization. With that, you might be familiar with our Compass statewide system of support. Also, food and nutrition is another area where we need more faster real-time modernization. And so both of those divisions are coming in together to help with that modernization, specifically so we can have faster real-time data systems to be able to look at apple-to-apple data and say, okay, we can track this a little bit easier. Another thing that makes it more difficult is that our districts have local control to be able to choose what the information systems that they use to take in their own data about their students. And so being able to upgrade and modernize the system that we have at MDE to talk to that 7-8, I'm looking at Rep. Bakeberg right now, systems that we have across the state is going to help us understand better that data that's coming in, pool it in a one central lake, and then be able to give you information in real time about what the questions are and the real time problems that we're trying to solve. It's going to take probably a year, year and a half to get that going and then be able to start answering those problems in a better, faster way.
Did you need a follow-up?
Yes, thank you so much, Madam Chair. No, I appreciate that information. That means a lot. I just want to make sure that we're doing everything in our capability to make sure that these kids are in a safe environment, not just looking at the dollars that come with that 15-day enrollment, but their wellness as well. So thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you. Maybe a quick question from you too before we go over to Representative Green. Now, we're talking the 15-day absence. Those are unexcused absences, right? How does that work in with excused absences?
That's a great question. Oh, sorry, Madam Chair. Yes, okay. That's a great question. So the 15-day drop rule is specific about unexcused absence. As soon as there is an excused absence, so in the example that the representative gave, that resets the clock, so to say. And that excused versus unexcused really is a determination that is decided at the local school level. And that's some work also that MDE is working, the attendance team through Compass, is working on with the pilot districts to talk through, because we've found also, even with that group of 12 school districts in the pilot group, there's a very vast varying degree on what an attendance definition between unexcused, excused policies within those districts, what that looks like. And so trying to come up with some concrete definitions just in that group, along with concrete policy, draft policy language within that group, that can help us come to this group, the Senate also, and say, here's some policy language that we'd like you to consider that would make across the state language possible. And we're hearing from those 12 districts that they're very interested in, while we're a local control state, they're very interested in having a baseline from where to go from for their own policy language.
Thank you. Representative Kreisha, Chair
Kreisha. Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, we were just going back and forth on some of the things that were said. Is what we've heard, is that accurate? Is there, we're just trying to work through some things, so I want to give you a chance to respond to that. On the drop.
Mr. Strom.
Chairs Joachim and Kreisha, yes, the issue on the drop is the assignment code can vary vary after the fact, but in terms of determining the 15-day drop, the school district itself is responsible for determining the attendance. There isn't a statewide attendance requirement. So if I don't want to, well, when the school districts with the attendance project come up, they can talk about their different ways of doing that. But I think the important point is, under Director Erickson's division, there are pupil unit auditors. There are, three employees in Director Erickson's division whose sole job is to go to districts and audit their pupil counts and have the district be able to ensure that the students that were there were there. And that includes looking at their attendance records and how those records are organized. So some school districts may do it with a sign-in approach. Others may have an account that's turned into the general office each hour. Depending on the district, they do that differently. But if they are audited, they need to be able to demonstrate that they have counted attendance in a way that can be matched to the pupil units. The last thing I'd add on this is, if somebody enrolls somewhere else, if they leave District A, 15 days pass, the district then of unexcused absence, the district enters this enrollment code, the 14, is the number of that code, and that shows the 15-day drop. But if they subsequently hear from another district, District C says, oh, they enrolled with us, then they go back and change that count, that code. So that student's code reflects what actually happened, even if initially it's shown as a 15-day drop. But then when the records request and the new enrollment record for that student, if they've enrolled in another school district, appears, then that code gets changed.
I did not realize you were an expert on MARS codes, too, which is fascinating. No, you have so much in there. Wow.
Madam Chair, no, the department had a meeting for nonpartisan staff last week, and they have some experts on the school accounting system, and they were bringing us up to speed on the way this works.
Well, thank you for all the work that you do as well. Chair Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you. And I did not mean to insinuate you were wrong. I'm trying to get the information clear out. So to either Mr. Strom or the testifier, does it matter on the 15 whether they're excused or unexcused? Does that matter at all?
Assistant Commissioner Mansfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kreisha, it does matter if they're unexcused or excused. It is 15-day drop depends on unexcused absences.
Chair Kreisha?
Is that what the statute says?
Mr. Strong.
Okay.
Chair Kreisha, yes.
Okay.
Chair Kreisha, any others?
No, thank you very much.
Representative Green and then Representative Lawrence. Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, MD, for this presentation. So, you know, we have seen a lot of objective data on the impact of Operation Metro Surge across businesses, in many different ways. And we heard from teachers and students and administrators about students not being in class here in Ed Finance and also in Ed Policy. And so I'm curious if You have been able to track how many students have had a 15-day drop since the start of Operation Metro Surge, and have they been re-enrolled or not, and if you're tracking that data.
Assistant Commissioner Mansfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep Green. That is a hard number right now for us to track because of the newness of the law requiring us to do the unaccounted for student form. We do have preliminary numbers for that unaccounted for student form, which isn't right now including, I'm trying to pull up my slide, it doesn't currently include Hennepin County because they're going to deliver our numbers, their numbers collectively because of all the students and schools that represent that county. We just had a meeting with them, I believe, on Monday. I was there, but the week has been full. And we clarified some things, how we want the document and everything. So they're going to deliver that to us in a secure spreadsheet. Right now, we've only received, and this was pre-high moment of Operation Metro Surge, we've only received 36 total students that have been reported. Once we get that list from Hennepin County, it's going to go up dramatically. We do know from what they told us. And of those 36 students we've received, some of them were inclusive of students that were beyond just this school year. Not many, just 3 students were reported for school years before 24-25. And then 20 of the students were reported for the 24-25 school year. So of this school year, only 13 students were reported. So I do predict the number will go up, but we don't really right now have an idea of how much because of the lot. We don't have Hennepin County. And I will, one more thing I will say is that when it's a new protocol like this, it often takes districts and schools like time to get it in their repertoire of practices that they're doing on a regular basis.
Representative Green, follow up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you. So I guess I'm just, so it sounds like there's going to be more information collected that you'll be able to assess to see the impact. But then do you take the data, I know we're talking about 15-day drop, but do you look at the increase of attendance loss during this time as well? Are you looking at that? It's kind of out of the scope of what we're talking about a little bit, but I think it impacts it because I just want to make sure to what Representative Ingen had talked about, like the well-being of the students and like, I just want to make sure we have a really good picture of that impact so that we can address it appropriately.
Ms. Erickson.
Madam Chair, Representative, we have these two separate data collections, which Assistant Commissioner Mansfield spoke about the reports. From a MARS perspective, we will be collecting data for the first end of year in March, and in April is when we're going to have what we call a statewide edit, which is where we do go match off files. So in April, after we get that submission, we will have a sense of how many students used what we call a status ENCODE 14, which is tells us the 15-day drop. We will be able to provide that as a general piece of where we are. But as Mr. Strum had mentioned earlier, when a student is under that status ENCODE but then finds themselves re-enrolled either back in the resident district that they were at or a different district, that district will go in and change that 14 code to say left the district to another district or left out of state example. So we will have that for the period of time that they're considered a 15-day drop, and we'll be able to provide some of that information in April.
Thank you. Representative Lawrence.
Chair Joachim, thank you very much. And to our presenters, thank you for the information today. My question may have been answered if I heard correctly, but the question was, how many students total fall into this criteria? And I heard a number 36, but I think you're referring to something else. But do you know how many students total or percentage of our state fall into this 15-day drop?
Ms. Erickson.
Madam Chair, Representative, we will know a better number in April. And we do want to say that 15-day drops happen all the time in a lot of districts for many, many reasons. So we will be able to collectively put that together and then be able to provide that closer to April. So I don't have a number for you today, but we will be able to provide that as soon as we get this next statewide edit submission from our LEAs around the state.
Okay.
Representative Lawrence.
Yeah, Chair Joachim. Do you have a number from last year, just ballpark from last year, or out of curiosity?
I think Mr. Strom might be able to answer this.
Madam Chair, again, Director Erickson's division is always so wonderful. They gave us the last 3 years for the fall counts, which finished through December. And Representative Lawrence, there were about 3,400 students in the fall of 24, 3,300 for that fall of 25. So that's the edit period through December. And then for this year through December, the fall 26 count is 3,480. So out of 870,000 students or so, the half year count of the number that get a code assigned to the 15-day drop is about 3,000. So you could make the ratio out of that. And then for last year was about 6,200 in total. So the half day count for the last 2 years lined up with roughly lined up with the count for the end of the year. As the witnesses have said, this year may be quite different, but as a benchmark for you, use 6,000 out of the 870,000 or thereabouts, and that's the percent that are getting that 15-day drop code.
Thank you. With that, I don't see any other questions. Oh, sorry, Representative Bakeberg.
I was slow on the draw today. So I just want to get back and clarify a couple things. Thank you for coming. Thank you for just a good overview. So, and I could very easily be wrong in this, so I just want to fully say that. So the 15-day drop, so as a building principal, if a student is out on a medical situation, it's always been my assumption and my understanding that obviously that's an excused absence. We know where the kid is at. The kid had surgery. But we always were questioning that when we got to 15 days, we needed to do something, and there's flexibility, I appreciate, for how we engage that student. But we always felt like we had to do a Zoom call or do something to engage so that we had some face-to-face with that kid. But am I understanding that we no longer have to do that because we only have to worry about the unexcused absence that we code, as Mr. Strom so eloquently pointed out? So am I understanding that correctly?
Assistant Commissioner Mansfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Keeler. Bakeberg. I am sorry.
I'll take that. I really respect Representative Keeler.
It's the past meeting. I was just in with both of you, so excuse me. You're thinking of the compulsory instruction statute that allows you to have those different moments of counting instruction for students when they're in positions like that. So if a student has surgery and has extended days where they're at home, you can count the instruction that you are giving to that student in different ways than just in school moments. So you are absolutely correct that those count.
Representative Bakeberg.
But if I'm not able to, thank you, Madam Chair, but if the student is unable to engage, in the past, we have dropped for whatever reason. If the student has not been able to do a Zoom call, we know the student is out on a medical situation, but they're not able to engage. So we've always understood it that we have to drop that student from enrollment. But what I'm hearing is we no longer need to do that.
Assistant Commissioner Mansfield.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative. That is where there's that wiggle room for the district to make those decisions depending on your policy.
Representative Bakeberg?
Yep, a couple more. Thank you. So we have flexibility to make those determinations is what I'm hearing. So we've had lots of conversations about Operation Metro Surge. And I just, for the record, I lived it as a principal. It was extremely difficult on our kids and our community. So my question is, 126C gives the commissioner the authority to establish a flexible year program because of an epidemic, calamity, weather, fuel shortage. And then it talks about applications. Has the department received applications from school districts in relation to subdivision 11 in 126C?
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Baker, we've certainly received inquiries on this statute, and what we've done is we've done individual outreach to those inquiring districts around the options. So very helpfully, the statute that you helped pass last year around how do we get attendance with these students, and it's around using the local flexibilities and local creative strategies around instruction, supervision, and services to the students to get them in attendance, make those connections to those students, use the flexibilities that the legislature has passed over the past several years, including making all LEAs online learning automatically approved providers. So that we've had those in-depth conversations because we're really focused on having those connections and helping districts and charters be leveraging their strategies and their flexibilities they have right now.
Representative Baker.
So I'm hearing there's not been any applications as of yet. You know, and it sounds like from Ms. Erickson that, you know, the calculation will be coming. So,
Mr. Uni. Madam Chair, Representative Baker, I'll go back and check to see if there's been any formal applications. What I'm saying is what I've heard back from teams and leadership who've been engaged in these conversations at a more in-depth level than I have is the inquiries that we received, but I don't want to give an indication of yes, no, if we've received any applications or not. I just don't have that information right now.
Representative Baker.
I appreciate that. And, you know, Mr. Uni raised his hand, and the teacher in me had to call on the person raising their hand. And this is a point of clarity, and this we've had lots of conversations I have with stakeholders in the room. And this is an important piece for planning for schools. So will the department approve these applications if districts apply under Subdivision 11?
Mr. Uni.
Madam Chair, Representative Bakeberg, that's a fair question. I don't have the answer for you in terms of, I mean, it's a case-by-case basis that we have to look at it, so I can't give you an answer of yes or no.
Representative Bakeberg, one more follow-up because I really want to get to the folks that came to testify about the absentee pilot project.
Perfect, thank you. I just think it's important. There's bills being talked about right now to address this issue. We don't need to pass a bill to do it. Because if we do it right now, the department says, yep, we're going to do it. Districts have already budgeted for this year and moving forward. Like, the department has the authority to do it. Just do it. Provide the clarity for schools. I just met with one of the groups earlier today, and they are very concerned not only about this, but talking about all of the other financial realities that schools are facing. So I don't want us to get lost from that. We had a $400 million cut last year. We have $250 million coming from the Blue Ribbon Commission. We have unemployment insurance on the horizon, paid leave, ESST. All of these are coming to our schools. So if we can provide a little bit of clarity without getting tied up in the political process, I would highly encourage the department to provide the clarity so we don't have to take our time to hear bills on things that you already have the authority to do. Then we can take the time that we have, the limited time, to fix those issues that we know are coming as well. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Baker. With that, I want to thank our testifiers and MDE for coming up, and we'll move on to something I'm excited as well to hear about, the attendance pilot projects and all the work that they have been doing. As a reminder, we put money together last session, actually in 2024, to create a pilot project among 12 districts, school districts across the state in every different region. to look at some of these issues with boots on the ground on how they're doing attendance. And we tasked you to meet quarterly, and I hear you've been meeting monthly, and you've been very timely with your reports, so I'm excited to have you here today. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself one at a time and then proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Morgan McDowell, and I'm an MTSS teacher on special assignment with the Burnsville-Egan-Savage School District.
And my name is Amy Petrowski. I'm the Director of Student Support Services in Burnsville, and we are honored to be part of the attendance pilot and to share the results of the school districts with you.
Thank you. And go ahead and proceed, whoever's going first.
To move from theory to action, Burnsville-Egan-Savage formed a dedicated district attendance team. The team engaged in thorough database decision-making process to organize our response and align resources. We shared more about this process last year. The team identified actionable data as a need. Through a multidisciplinary collaboration involving diverse expertise across all grade levels, we developed a district attendance handbook. The handbook establishes uniform processes, clear communication protocols, and specific guidance for school attendance teams. As of the current academic year, every school in our district now has a dedicated school attendance team. These teams are essential for providing consistent, tiered support, recognizing that chronic absenteeism is a complex issue with no one-size-fits-all solution. Data demonstrates that barriers to attendance are often rooted in external community factors. We have strengthened our preventative partnerships in collaboration with Dakota and Scott counties to address these systemic challenges. Our district implemented a responsive safety plan designed to mitigate the impact of ICE activity. We observed a direct correlation between community safety concerns and parent decisions to keep children home. ICE activity in the community led to an unprecedented number of student withdrawals due to the 15 consecutive day absence rule. To follow up from previous conversations, it is our understanding of statute and our current practice that consecutive days includes excused and unexcused absences. We formally petitioned the commissioner to address this issue. Fortunately, our district's proactive investment in the 191 Virtual Academy provided a critical safety net. This platform allowed students to maintain access to grade-level instruction with their peers during periods of community instability. We saw a 440% increase in elementary Virtual Academy enrollment, necessitating a significant and rapid reallocation of building-based staff to virtual roles. We continue to prioritize student safety and educational continuity regardless of the barriers that exist outside our school doors. Next, we're going to move to Chisholm. Chisholm recognized that their data pointed to a clear reality. Attendance letters alone are often just busy work that fail to change behavior. To drive real results, the district shifted its focus from enforcing consequences to addressing root causes. Mm-hmm. By investing in mentorship and direct family outreach, Chisholm successfully identified the specific barriers, such as transportation, mental well-being, school connectedness, family dynamics, and supports that keep students from the classroom. They have since streamlined policies to remove unnecessary hurdles, including pre-makeup slips and rigid tardy rules. Chisholm is replacing automated notice with human connection and community collaboration to ensure every student has a clear path to school. However, to continue this work, funding for mentors must be a top priority, as the costs for these needs are challenging for small rural schools to bear.
Columbia Heights has found that high attendance isn't just a goal. It's a result of highly focused school-based teams. By establishing consistent meeting protocols and humanizing every student situation, the district ensures that follow-through leads to intentional support. They need to build a robust ecosystem and partnerships, like linking county resources and community organizations directly to the families who need them most. This effort is anchored in internal accountability, where annual training and consistent processes of evaluation ensure that even when staff changes, the system remains strong. Ultimately, Columbia Heights is proving that consistent feedback and human connection are the keys to keeping every student on track. ICE activities in Columbia Heights negatively impacted attendance in December, January, and February. Cook County's success is built on the foundation of consistency. They recognize that attendance starts at the front desk, where office staff members strive to code absences fairly and respond to families in a unified voice. By educating families early on policy and staying efficient and persistent with support services, they catch concerns before they become a crisis. Their model isn't a quick fix. It's a long-haul commitment to shifting school culture through the dedicated attendance teams. Ultimately, Cook County proves that when you pair clear accountability with tireless pursuit of root causes, you create a system that truly supports every student every day.
Minneapolis is leading a fundamental shift from a failure-first model to a proactive problem-solving framework. Instead of waiting for a student to disengage, they prioritize early positive outreach to catch barriers before they become habits. Their strategy puts student voice at the center, using it to co-create solutions rather than just enforcing rules. By building a comprehensive bank of evidence-based practices from universal support to intensive intervention, they ensure every school has the right tool for every situation. Ultimately, Minneapolis proves that attendance is a shared district-wide commitment where families, staff, and community partners all play a vital role in keeping students connected. Moorhead's strategy is built on evidence-based intervention and operational precision. By implementing the check and connect model, they provide direct, high-touch mentorship to students across grade bands. They've moved beyond internal silos by partnering with Clay County for monthly cross-agency meetings with the aim of tackling even the most complex family-level barriers together. With weekly building-level accountability and working towards standardized attendance coding across the district, Moorhead is working to ensure their data is clean and their interventions are timely. In addition, they're looking ahead to a community-wide book study to ensure the important stakeholders, from parents to local leaders, share a common language around absenteeism and the challenges they face.
Northfield Public Schools is championing a statewide consistency and accountability attendance data. They recognize that for attendance, data is meaningfully informed funding decisions and high-level policy. It must be grounded in clear, coherent definitions applied to consistently across the systems. Through investment in a dedicated attendance liaison, Northfield ensures that its attendance framework is not merely a written plan, but a living, continuously improving system. This role provides leadership, coordination, and accountability to align practice with policy. As students' needs grow increasingly complex, Northfield is implementing strategies aligned with the multi-varied attempts approach to family engagement while acknowledging that schools cannot meet these challenges alone. Their strategy is clear: align the data, empower attendance leadership, and strengthen community partnerships so that attendance is treated as a critical priority for student success. Red Lake is proving that attendance improves when students take the lead. By empowering peer leaders and utilizing ninth grade advisories, they are working on shifting attendance from a requirement to a point of student ownership and motivation. This school-centered approach is backed by connected school-wide efforts, ensuring that every program is pulling the same direction. They are working on standardizing their systems from how they code data with the guidance of the pilot program to how they engage families to ensure that every decision is transparent and accurate. Ultimately, Red Lake's success comes from proactive partnerships, building strong relationships with families long before the absence becomes a crisis.
Rochester's model is grounded in data-driven practices for attendance teams and the Freshman on Track initiative, with an emphasis on implementing consistent attendance team practices district-wide. Using locally built real-time dashboards, teams work to identify root causes of absenteeism and align targeted supports and interventions to each individual student's needs. This year, the district has strengthened family outreach and communication through monthly newsletters and attendance data text messages sent to all families. They also launched the Reentry Project to reconnect with students after a 15-day drop absence. In the coming months, they plan to explore additional transition supports, such as link and web programming. notably ICE presence in the community, negatively impact the district attendance rate from January through February. Soft Rapids is building a standardized roadmap for attendance across their entire district. By revising attendance codes and developing a comprehensive attendance handbook, they're working to ensure that every building is speaking the same language and following the same playbook. Their strategy centers on consistent triaging, using solidified school teams to identify needs, and monthly county meetings to bridge the gap between school and home. They are diligent and realistic, acknowledging that while external factors like mental health are out of their direct control, a unified system of communication and action ensures no student faces those barriers alone.
Wyndham's success is a testament to the power of a dedicated attendance coordinator. By having a consistent, visible presence in the hallways, the district has transformed attendance from a policy into a relationship. This boots-on-the-ground approach has drastically reduced classroom tardies and built deep trust with families, even providing practical supports like rides to school when barriers arise. While they are solidified, their coding and real-time accuracy, Wyndham's true glow is in the human connection. Their next step is ensuring the long-term sustainability of this role and continuing to bridge the gaps for the most vulnerable and newest families. Common challenges were identified by many school districts. The findings from our pilot districts underscore a critical reality. Data integrity is the foundation of intervention. Currently, however, the foundation is fractured. Districts report an unsustainable amount of staff time is being diverted simply to ensure basic accuracy of attendance data. This disparity between various student information systems and data warehouse means that actionable data is not a universal standard. Some school attendance teams work with lagging indicators rather than real-time insights, delaying the ability to reach a student before they fall behind. Most pilot districts have attendance and support teams. Many teams struggle to maintain the consistency meeting cadences to ensure the presence of the key holders due to chronic staffing shortages and daily triaging of the nature of the operations. We must acknowledge that transportation remains a barrier. If a student cannot physically get to the building, our best interventions are moot. We have identified a significant need for preventative family engagement. We are fighting deep-seated misconceptions, such as the belief that absences only impact learning if they're unexcused. In addition, families often lose track of the total loss, significantly underestimating the cumulative impact or sporadic absences on a student's academic trajectory, directly impacting graduation. Due to inefficient data systems and lack of administrative capacity, there is often a significant lag between a student hitting a threshold and a county reporting filed. Perhaps most concerning is that the reoccurring theme that county referrals often result in little to no meaningful interventions and fail to address the root causes of the absenteeism.
Over the past 18 months, our collaboration with districts across Minnesota has revealed a powerful truth. Attendance is not an isolated task, it is a core component of student success. We have seen tremendous success in aligning attendance efforts with Minnesota MTSS. To scale the success, we believe a state-level inventory of evidence-based interventions categorized by tiers 1, 2, and 3 is essential. While the pilot funding has been a vital catalyst, we must be candid about the human cost. Pilot initiatives often outgrow pilot dollars. Moving the needle on chronic absenteeism requires significant person power to organize, implement, and evaluate these interventions. Without sustained funding for dedicated staff, we risk losing the momentum these pilots have generated. We are shifting from reactive truancy models to proactive family engagement. However, these positive outreach efforts are labor-intensive and require a specialized skill set beyond traditional administrative roles. Student voice must be prioritized to gain the perspective necessary to foster a healthy school climate. By engaging students directly, processes and practices are strengthened. When students feel they belong, they show up. We are currently navigating a significant mismatch between data and reality. The vast majority of missed school days are classified as excused. However, current statutes and county requirements focus almost exclusively on unexcused absences. While we are overwhelmed by the paperwork of truancy, the more accurate predictor of student outcomes is chronic absenteeism. We need a collaborative system that allows schools and counties to track and respond to lost instructional time rather than just legal compliance. In addition, it would be valuable for statute to consider the percentage of instruction missed rather than aggregate full-day absences. 7 absences in October represents a much higher risk to foundational learning than 7 absences in April. Measuring the percentage of the school year missed allows for a weighted approach to intervention, prioritizing students based on their actual risk of academic failure. Finally, we need clarity regarding definitions. Currently, there is a wide variance across the state in how districts define a tardy, a half-day absence, a full-day absence, or an exempt absence. Despite these inconsistencies, attendance metrics are compared district to district as if we are all using the same yardstick. We need a standardized definition of absence to ensure data equity and accurate statewide reporting. To continue with the lessons learned about the lack of clarity about absence of definition, a dedicated subcommittee was established to refine statewide coding and counting practices. This group consists of representatives from 7 pilot districts, MDE, and Compass. The subcommittee meets monthly with the primary objective of improving the accuracy, reliability, and comparability of attendance data across the state. Currently, Minnesota districts operate under different definitions for absence, tardy, and exempt status. This lack of uniformity creates significant challenges for statewide data analysis and equitable accountability. There is no universal standard for what constitutes half day versus a full day. One district may code 2 missed periods as a half day while a neighboring district requires 4. The use of the word exempt is ambiguous in statute. An exempt absence, which is actually marked as present, is often used when a student is not in their regular instruction and instead participating in a field trip, a district-sponsored activity, or with a school nurse or social worker. Some districts classify medical appointments as exempt, while most do not. There's a lack of consensus on when missed instruction time transitions from a tardy to an absence. For instance, if a student attends only 10 minutes of a 50-minute block, districts currently lack a standardized rule for coding that time. Additionally, there's a lack of clarity of how to code when a student leaves early, which doesn't fit the typical definition of tardy. The subcommittee is moving toward a formalized framework to eliminate these discrepancies. A draft state model policy is being designed to strengthen the reliability and equity of attendance data. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your presentation and all the work you're doing and even creating a subcommittee to look more deeply at the data and how to code things. So thank you. With that, I think we'll move to member questions. I have Lee, Reem, Quam, and I think Mueller on the list, but we'll start with Representative Reem.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. I had a question about how the students' perspective has factored into your takeaways and how involved they were in the attendance pilot. I'm kind of curious if extracurriculars factor into this, because I've heard from a number of students who say that the one thing that made them go to school was being involved in theater or, you know, some kind of club or being in a sport or, you know, taking a class that they liked. And I'm kind of curious if you were able to process that kind of data or if you got that perspective from the students.
Go ahead.
Madam Chair, so we are one district of the 12, so there's our various practices of how districts have gained student voice. One thing that we did last year is have our social workers interview students and ask a variety of questions. We tried to do it through that medium because they already have a relationship with the student, know the students who are struggling to attend school regularly. And yes, that is a big piece of sense of belonging, having those activities. Our school attendance teams are then using that information as they identify students who have attendance concerns.
Representative Fella.
Thank you. Yeah, I mean, I've heard from students that that's really a huge factor in whether or not they're going to go to school. You know, if they have something they're looking forward to, they'll be at school. Otherwise, it's really hard to get to school. The other thing that we have in Eastern Carver County district, we have a second bus, which is really nice. So for kids who miss that first bus, we've been able to arrange for a second bus to come by and pick up those kids, which has really helped with attendance. So that's a really creative way, and it's been very successful to get the kids to school.
Thank you, Representative Reem. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Chair. So my question is about some of the common challenges that you mentioned at the end of your presentation. I'm wondering if you can just elaborate a little bit more about the difficulties with working with county staff. I just want also to clarify if you mean like the CPS staff when you have county staff in your presentation.
Who would like to answer
interestingly,
that?
Interestingly, Amy and I just came from a social work department meeting where we invited representatives from Dakota and Scott County. So that collaboration and partnership has increased tremendously since we've engaged in this pilot. There's just a lot of unique situations of how a student shows up and the rules then the county has about reporting that. So a high school social worker commented about, you know, statute is full day absences. So what if a student misses 100 days and they miss six of seven periods, can we report them? And the county's like, well, no, we can't actually take that because it's not a full day. So there's a lot of those challenges.
And I would say that, you know, being in a school district that actually operates through two different counties, the two different counties do have different rules. And so it's difficult for school districts that work with two separate counties to create policies and procedures and practices that would be equitable with all, with the same response coming from the counties. And so I do feel like this partnership, the two counties are even working together. They really do know what the other one is doing, which is helpful when we are reaching out to the counties to get support for our families.
Representative Lee, follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And thank you so much for your explanation. This is kind of what I was trying to allude to. So last session I was in Children and Families, and one of the things that we learned is that we have 87 counties, and each of the 87 counties have different policies and procedures for, you know, how they work with our children and in the CPS system. And that this was like an area, I think, that the OLA suggested that we needed more conformity. And it looks like, you know, in addressing absenteeism, that would probably help too. So.
Yes, thank you. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm planning to have some meetings with my superintendents, and I noticed the verbiage in the slides and the material we have is slightly different than the presentation, and I was hoping that we could have a copy of what their speech that had more details, and that way I can have that as a reference when I'm talking to those superintendents and you know, a fuller discussion on this topic. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll look at getting you that. Representative Mueller, did you have your hand up? I had you on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you very much for your presentation. As a teacher for multiple decades, it's really important to have a correct, accurate count of our students. You know, as I was listening to your data, oftentimes when we're in that planning phase, we have a lot of, you know, words that are said that sound all the same. But I really liked Wyndham's report because of the fact that they had actionable things that we could actually observe. They said, we actually observe less students in the hallway. We're seeing decreased numbers. So I was wondering, maybe it just wasn't in the slides, were there other pilots that had measurable results that they could see this early in the stage? And I do have one follow-up question, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, whoever would like to answer that.
Well, I guess I can only speak to Burnsville because it's our data. But one of the things that we noticed is that we were, it was interesting because as we went through the attendance program or our attendance program policy or whatever, one of the things that we noticed is that we were not even aligned within our school as to how different schools were doing attendance. It depended a lot of times upon that clerical or the attendance clerical that was doing some of those things. And so by aligning that, I really do think that this year was probably a really good baseline for what? Just because our goal was to try to get us aligned across our full system. And I would say by aligning that and by doing our own definitions, which we are locally able to do, by aligning some of those things, I feel like at one point we felt like we were really on the right path as we educated our families, we educated our staff, and we educated our support staff regarding it. So we are all doing the same thing. And then And then, you know, we ran into a situation where we definitely did have to pivot. And the pivot came to determining how we're going to engage our students in learning when they're not able to come to school, which is not their choice.
Representative Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for that. I just hope that these pilots are, sorry, you're in a weird place, and I'm trying to make sure that
I'm
sorry. No, you guys are fine. I don't normally sit right here, so it's, thank you. I just know that during these pilots, it's really easy to desire to spend money on something that's going to have continuing costs, that are going to continue to cost in the future. Mm-hmm. And so has the districts, and maybe just only in your area, because yes, you can only talk about your area, have they really had those conversations of how we could use the money that we have gotten from these pilots to, okay, we have this idea, how can we do that within our current budget, knowing that that's going to change, knowing that this money is going to you know, not be there forever, which is kind of the things with schools. And then the last part is those attendance positions that you hired, or like the attendance coordinator or whatever. When you hired those people, did you have a certain criteria for that, or was there a specific license that you were looking to hire for that position, or was, as what I have often found, is that you need to find the right person who can create those right relationships. And so just interested in seeing how that would be look, would be, and Madam Chair, that would be my last question. Thank you.
Okay, go ahead. Whether McDowell or Petrowski?
Petrowski.
Petrowski, yeah. I'm so sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, I'm only going to speak for Burnsville. We use that attendance money to definitely fund a partial position of somebody who can oversee the processes that we were going to be building to align those things. And so we recognize that all grants run out and that it's difficult to fund something when you've had it. So our purpose in using the money was actually to grow the capacity within so that it could become more sustainable. We still have next year left, and I do believe that overseeing it for another year, we can even continue to build that capacity. And, you know, it takes money to educate our community about some changes that are being made. And so that was also another really big push at the beginning of the year during open houses. Lots of conversations happened around attendance. So I'm not exactly sure what other districts are going to be doing with that funding or those additional people that they have hired, but our goal is to be able to have that sustainability after next year.
Thank you. And thank you for that. And that was partially written into the grant process too, is that what they were looking at had to be sustainable, was one of the things that we would hope that would be sustainable, as well as getting the data back to us so that we could see if there was something statewide we could do. Members, any other questions before we move on? Seeing none, thank you so much for, I know you had to pinch hit and you did an amazing job, and I want to thank you for being here. The final thing we have on our agenda today is a presentation, or kind of presentation discussions on attendance issues that some of our student support personnel are here today to tell us what they're seeing on the ground as well. So with that, I'll call up first, I've got Kathy Schultz, Health Service Coordinator with Anoka Hennepin, Molly Forrest, licensed school nurse with Intermediate District 287, and Clinton Ferguson from Minneapolis Public Schools at Washburn, and then we have, is on remote with two other remote testifiers. So we'll do the in-person testifiers first, and hopefully you can stick around and we'll save questions until the end. But why don't we go first with, go ahead, Kathy Schultz, introduce yourself, state your name for the record, and proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Schultz, and I'm the National Association of School Nursing Director for Minnesota, and currently serve on the National Professional Practice Document Advisory Committee. As a committee member, I was a liaison for the NASN position statement addressing chronic absenteeism. I'm here to address a critical challenge facing our schools, chronic absenteeism. School nurses and efforts to reduce chronic student absenteeism has a long history beginning in the early 1900s. In 1902, Lena Rogers, a pioneer in school nursing, was able to successfully show the correlation between the reduction in absenteeism and healthy children. Today, the goal of the school nurse is the same as it was in 1902, to promote health in school children, allowing them to regularly attend school and be in the classroom ready to learn. The National Association of School Nursing position statement indicates that school attendance is essential for academic success. Significant loss of learning time due to chronic absenteeism critically impacts academic attainment and places students at risk for student dropout and potentially negative long-term effects on their health, education, and employment status and financial stability. Chronic absenteeism is defined by attendance works as missing 10% or more of school days with one academic year for a reason that are unexcused absences or excused absences. Absenteeism can start when a student misses just one or two or more days of school a month. Poor attendance patterns may begin in kindergarten and can contribute to the lack of achievement of student reading ability, which is critical to accomplish by third grade. In third grade, they're learning to read, and after that, they learn when they're reading. One recent multi-study found that when school nurses are present and actively monitoring students, they can reduce chronic absenteeism, essentially along students facing social determinants of health barriers, such as economic disadvantage. Another body of research demonstrates that school nurses and school nurse interventions are associated with improved attendance and better management of chronic health conditions that would otherwise keep students out of class. School nurses are equally positioned to identify and intervene early with students in risk of absenteeism due to health concerns, including chronic conditions and mental health challenges. School nurses are members of the school attendance teams. School nurses provide expert guidance on students' health, safety, and social-emotional factors. They also contribute health perspectives to the development of individualized attendance, intervention plans, school programs, retroactive practices, and equitable policies that address chronic absenteeism. These school nursing actions align with the framework for the 21st century school nursing practice. Domains of care coordination, leadership, quality improvement, and community and public health, and contribute to decreasing absenteeism. Studies of school nurse management, intervention, infection prevention, and evaluation of illnesses all demonstrate reduced absenteeism or missed class time. Investing in full-time qualified school nurses isn't just good for school health, it's good for their academic outcomes and equality. I urge you to support policies and funding initiatives that ensure every school has the nursing resources necessary to keep students healthy, engaged in the classroom. Thank you.
Thank you. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Molly Forrest, and today I'm speaking on behalf of the School Nurse Organization of Minnesota. I am currently in my 16th year as a licensed school nurse, and I'd like to use my time today to really focus on those last three words, a licensed school nurse, and what that means for a student's health and attendance. Most kids see their primary care provider once a year, a specialist maybe every 3 to 6 months, but kids in schools with full-time licensed school nurses have access to a healthcare provider every day. We are the wraparound services and the healthcare case managers that can gather parents, teachers, support staff, and outside providers when we identify a potential problem. If early intervention is the key to good outcomes and better attendance, then licensed school nurses are the most cost-effective method we have for preventing prolonged student absences and keeping kids in classrooms. In my career, I've discovered students' diabetes because of symptoms we monitored at school, witnessed a student's first seizure and supported their parents through the next steps, counseled young people after a positive pregnancy test, and even found an abdominal hernia missed by a student's provider after they went in with acute stomach pain. I found errors in medication orders from providers, performed advanced CPR, and liaised with child protection and police departments when a student presented with injuries from an abusive parent that no one else had seen. I don't know what would have happened in these situations if the person in my role had not been a professional nurse, but it's likely they would have become more serious and potentially dangerous. I can decide when a student needs to go home to prevent other illnesses, and I can decide when they stay, and I can spot a faker at 50 paces. A licensed school nurse is a legally defined position in our state, and it means that we have the necessary pedagogy and certifications to operate as independent healthcare providers in schools. We have a very unique scope of practice that allows us to wear all the different hats. Just this week, I have been a public health, infectious disease, psychiatric, endocrine, neurology, OB, gynecology, chemical health, and unfortunately, an ER nurse. Licensed school nurses increase the trust that families have in a district's ability to care for their child in an emergency or related to a chronic illness. Inherent in the discussion around health services and attendance is the lack of guidance for districts in how to staff their health offices. Many resort to the minimums outlined in state statute, which are dated and severely underestimate the time and staffing needed to adequately meet student needs. The result is that about half of the districts in our state employ no professional nurse at all. I am one of the rare LSNs in Minnesota that is able to be full-time in the same building, forming long-term relationships with both students and their families. The majority of my colleagues are split between two or more buildings, sometimes responsible for thousands of children, and have to dedicate their limited time to meetings and the handful of students with the greatest current need. And that's if there's a professional nurse employed at all. This is how little things get missed and bigger problems, small problems become bigger and absences grow. We are encountering a student population with greater needs than ever, particularly in the areas of medical and mental health. We talk a lot about multi-tiered systems of support, a framework that is meant to be proactive, evidence-based, and comprehensive in promoting student success. But none of these things can be true unless school health services are considered as part of the solution and LSNs are in the buildings. The data shows that the students being disproportionately affected by this are just who you would expect. The smaller districts outstate and in rural areas where the law doesn't require one and where general access to health care is becoming more and more limited. And the districts with higher populations of students eligible for free and reduced lunch. We are seeing students that would benefit the most from greater access actually experience the least. And it feels like the only way to change this is to do so legislatively. Thank you so much for your time, and we are happy to answer any questions you might have about our profession. Thank you.
Thank you. With that, I have Clinton Ferguson from Minneapolis Public Schools via remote. And go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon. My name is Clinton Ferguson. I'm a licensed school counselor, and I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota. I'm happy to be here today, and I'm excited to tell you about what school counselors do and how we can support the things that we're talking about today. I got so excited today. So just to kind of frame it, I'm a public servant, and all of our counselors are. We love what we do, and we are passionate about it. We support our students. We're not in this for the money, like most of you, like all of you. We're not in this for the money. If I was in this for the money, I would have a car window tint selling business, and I'd be a millionaire right now. So recently with the surge in ICE, I mean, we've been under attack, you know, and that's what happened. The surge, the ICE deployed, and we didn't have to turn the TV on, look at your phone. We could just open our front door and see what's happening. Okay. And this has had such a negative impact on our students. They're terrified, scared, anxious, but we're here together. I'm so proud of my people. Minnesotans and Minneapolis residents standing, coming together. So with this, a lot of our students are experiencing significant trauma after this. Every student, to some degree, we are feeling this. To some degree, whether you got deported, which I have students that have, or if you have students that haven't been out of their house in 2 months, I have students that are on the bus. We don't have yellow school buses. We use Metro Transit. So I have students on the bus just coming to school, ICE comes on, checks papers of their classmates that are of color, and that's their morning. That's what they come to school with. That's how they're coming. And so it's our job as school counselors to provide support. We do academic support, we do social emotional support, and we do college and career readiness. I can tell you right now that out of my 130 seniors that I'm the counselor of record for, 5 will not be graduating. Due to ICE's surge, they will not be. 2 have been deported, three just stopped coming and told us that they aren't going to come back to school. So it's really impacting us. The sense of safety, the sense of dignity, unsure of if it's safe. And schools are supposed to be safe for kids. Now, the upside, what I look at when I see this, is the galvanizing of all of our community members. This is what makes me excited, because the support that we're going to have. I grew up in Minneapolis my whole life. Got kids. I got a 17-year-old that attends the school I work at. I got a 10-year-old that goes to neighborhood school. Mm-hmm. And to see our community members come out, counselors have helped with social workers to form like a parent patrol, to form, we raised $100,000 to support our families. We have a parent carpool. So we vetted families, and this is all happening in a very short amount of time. But from the block captains to the rapid response teams to the Purple Beret parents to the parent patrols, everybody is interested in the well-being of our students. And that makes me happy, because I know that the initiatives that we have that are going to fund and help our students be successful, you're going to have support. And so the Minnesota School Counseling Association, we're looking forward to helping you and getting this money to the kids. Through this all, we're tired. I don't know if you can tell, I'm tired, you know. So we're looking to you for support. We need support. And the last thing I'm gonna say is I have to, because it's who I am. I'm a school counselor, and I've been a school counselor for 10 years. And we've consistently been in the bottom five states. This year we're number 48 out of 50 states with regard to the ratio of students to counselor. I have 500 students on my caseload. My first year I had 630 students that I was responsible for as the counselor of record. Let's change that. I've come here before, I've spoken to this committee before, I communicated differently, and nothing happened, you know, and I plea and beg you that can we please get some funding for school counselors, because my profession may not exist in a few short years. So Minnesota, I know Minnesota, we're better than that. And I'm happy to help in any way with anything that supports our students. So thank you for your time. I appreciate you.
And thank you for your testimony and for spending time with us today and the work you do for our students. Next up remotely is Hillary Horab. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Hillary Horob, and I'm a school social worker serving students and families in the Rochester Public School District. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and have been a school social worker at RPS for 10 years. I am here today to share what I've directly observed regarding the impact of immigration enforcement on student attendance, well-being, and our school community, as well as the work we are doing to respond to this crisis. Over the past 6 weeks, our daily attendance rate has dropped from a consistent 92 to 95% down to 87%. That decline is not due to illness or lack of engagement. It is driven by fear. Many families do not feel safe stepping outside of their homes. As a result, I've been transporting 10 students to and from school twice a day, every day, for the last 5 weeks. Their parents are not comfortable leaving their homes, even to walk their children to the bus stop. Without this support, these students would not be attending school in person. In addition to transportation, we are delivering food and accepting donations for families who are unable to leave their homes. We have families who are rationing groceries because they are afraid to go to the store. We have children who are staying indoors for days and weeks at a time. Three students transferred to online learning because their families felt it was the only safe option. One of those students has since returned to in-person learning because we were able to provide door-to-door transportation in the school van. I want to share a few student stories to illustrate the human impact behind these numbers. One student had been home for 30 days. He participated in Google Classroom as much as he could, but he had not physically been in school for a month. When I picked him up for his first day back, he was so excited. He told me he hoped that he had PE because he hadn't been able to run around in 30 days. For him, school was not just a place to learn, it was the only place he could go outside. Another student who had transferred to online learning returned last week. As soon as he got in the van, he excitedly told me about his new sibling. Then he said, "I love school. Thanks for giving me a ride." That simple statement reflects how important access is. One eight-year-old on their first day back told me, "I'm 8 years old now. I had a birthday when I was gone from school. I couldn't go anywhere for my birthday, but I'm so excited to be back at school now so I can celebrate with my friends." We also see the impact in small daily moments. When announcements are made that we will have inside recess due to weather, many students are visibly disappointed. For some of them, the only time they are allowed to go outside is when they are at school. Recess is not just a break, it is their only access to fresh air and movement. Through our attendance pilot, we are working proactively and relationally. We are identifying students quickly when absences increase through the data systems we have created through the attendance pilot. We are making personal phone calls, conducting home visits when appropriate, coordinating transportation, connecting families to food resources, and building trust. We are not approaching attendance punitively. Rather, we are approaching it with empathy and problem solving. What I can tell you is this: our students want to be in school. They are eager to learn, to run, to celebrate birthdays, to see friends, but fear is keeping them home. When policies create fear in the broader community, schools feel it immediately. Attendance declines, anxiety increases, isolation grows, and children carry the weight of adult fears. Our work right now is about more than attendance percentages. It is about preserving stability, connection, and hope for children during an incredibly uncertain time. With targeted support, transportation, and community partnership, we are seeing students return. While this is a positive step, we know that there is a lingering trauma that will impact student consistent attendance and academic success for the foreseeable future. Thank you for the opportunity to share what we are witnessing on the ground and the work being done to ensure that every child has access to the safety, stability, and the opportunity that school provides. Dedicated funding ensures students have access to essential support staff, such as school social workers, creating the stability and sense of safety they need to learn and to thrive. Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you for the work you're doing on the pilot project as well. Last remote testifier is Dr. Anna Lee. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the Education Finance Committee for having me today. My name is Anna Lee, and I have the absolute privilege to speak about the wholly positive and necessary impact school psychologists have serving their students, schools, families, and communities nationally, and in particularly in Minnesota right now. I've volunteered and worked in K-12 public schools in some capacity for the last 10 years of my life, and in that time, I've learned about the truly special position that school psychologists hold in our education system. I firmly believe that an investment in our profession is of great benefit to our entire state. As school psychologists, we are often known for our roles in testing and assessing students for their special education eligibility. Although this role is necessary in upholding students' legal rights, today I want to highlight how our roles, whether in the job description or not, go far beyond our training and psychological assessment. At its core, our training encompasses evidence-based practices to support students holistically, from their academic skills to their social, emotional, and behavioral well-being, and of utmost importance, their mental health. Yet, with all of our extensive training, I stand before you today with a heavy heart because nothing can prepare us for the continued systemic violence enacted upon our students. As a school psychologist practicing research, I find it important to leverage both quantitative and qualitative data sources when understanding the context our students are learning in. Right now, both data sources are screaming that our students need more support because in the past 6 months, several events have shaken Minnesota to the core, and the trauma that stems from these events will be rooted in our communities for generations to come. I wonder if you all know how keenly aware our students are of school shootings around the country. Last year, I unexpectedly had a group of 10 inconsolable students sobbing in my office because there was a rumor that someone was seen around school premises with a weapon. I dropped all my plans for the day as their teacher wanted my support in providing mental health care for the students. In the time that they were supposed to be learning basic math skills, their brains and their bodies were overtaken with fear that this could happen to them. And let me be clear, their reactions were not overreactions because school-based gun violence could happen to them at any time. School shootings in the United States occur on a rinse and repeat cycle, and my students' fears were fully valid. Subsequently, and despite not having done an active shooter drill that year, my students were able to detail their plans for how they would handle an active shooter situation, ranging from hiding to leaping out the window to run. Their fears became even more real in September of this academic year when the Annunciation school shooting happened mere minutes from the students I attempted to console in my office last year. I think about the level of mental health care needed for students after these incidents, how I, as one school psychologist, had difficulty with supporting only 10 students through the fear of a school shooting. In light of the national recommendation for one school psychologist to every 500 students, this experience underscored the reality that our current average Minnesota ratio of one school psychologist for every 1,047 students is wholly inadequate for the mounting mental health needs of our students when school shootings have such far-reaching impacts on whole communities. It is also impossible to speak before the people of Minnesota that this committee and all of our legislators represent without discussing what my colleagues working in schools today, right now, are doing to not only make sure students feel supported in their learning, but to ensure that their students and families can continue living in their community. In normal times, school psychologists respond to crises, whether that be through assessing a student's risk to harm themselves or others, intervening when abuse occurs, or guiding families to resources to meet growing scarcity. But let me be clear that a federal occupation of ICE agents in our state is not normal times. When I was working in schools, I vividly remember the conversations I had with my young students who were hurt by the anti-immigrant vitriol spewing from the mouths of politicians. I remember having conversations with them about what to do if ICE were to talk with them on the playground. I remember spending hours with crying children in my office who feared for the safety of their parents and family members if they were to be deported by ICE. So while my students were supposed to be in the middle of an English class, they were instead in my office filled with anxiety of how the only world they might know could get turned upside down at any moment. This story is now a shared experience among school psychologists across the Twin Cities. The ethos of our profession is not only to shepherd children through education, but is expanded to defending their very lives. Greta and Tara, two of my colleagues who work in some of the largest metropolitan school districts, shared horror stories about the impact of the presence of ICE has had and continues to have on their students' well-being. One shared that a third of her student population has still been distance learning, several of whom rarely check in with the school personnel while distance learning. The fear among students, family, and staff is not going away at her school. The other shared she not only helps with families navigate online school, but she's also spending a lot more time in sessions talking with children about their sense of safety under increased ICE presence, ensuring they are emotionally safe to be at school and physically safe to get to school. Beyond that, she then supports students who look around at empty seats, knowing their peers are in hiding and deeply missing their presence in class. Greta and Tara are both superb at their jobs as school psychologists. Without a single weapon in their hands, they handle escalated emotions, difficult situations, and continuously unprecedented circumstances with educated, ethical decision-making and a deep compassion for the well-being of their students. Greta and Tara are like all of the other school psychologists across our state right now doing difficult work that goes beyond the normal testing and assessing. The physical and emotional violence being inflicted upon our students requires solutions that put more licensed mental health professionals in our schools, not less. We don't need bulletproof vests or weapons anywhere near or around our schools. We need our students to learn and grow in environments that are compassionate toward their humanity, because the research and basic human empathy demonstrate that this is how children flourish into healthy adults. That's what our trained and licensed student support staff in schools, like our school psychologists, our school social workers, school counselors, and school nurses do. We see the humanity in our students and operate with the collective belief that as a society, we need to see all children as our shared responsibility to nurture the next generation of adults. I cannot think of a single society that has ever failed because they invested too much time and resources into their children, students, or education. Rather, Minnesota has the opportunity to continue living up to our motto as a North Star state by guiding others to a world where we invest intentionally in the well-being of the youth in our schools. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lee, for your passionate testimony as well. Members, I want to go to questions, but first, MDE asked to come back up again to clarify something on the excused, unexcused piece that people had questions for. So if the testifiers would just move back, and then if we have questions, we'll bring it back up again. All right, so who's going to clarify what?
Madam Chair, it's the group. You've got the troop. Okay. Madam Chair, again, for the record, Do Shuni, Director of Government Relations for the Department of Education, and just appreciate the opportunity to provide some clarifications or corrections to some of the information that we provided earlier. Just apologies in advance, but when we find things out that need to be corrected, we try to provide that information to you right away. So I'll pass it off to the team here to provide some clarification.
Director Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. In our original testimony, when I originally talked about the 15-day drop from a funding standpoint, we talked about the 15 consecutive days. I did not distinguish between excused and unexcused. When Assistant Commissioner Mansfield was speaking to the truancy or the unassigned student report form, that form does only recognize unexcused, but I did want to make sure there was no confusion that under the funding 15-day drop, it is both excused and unexcused that count, so that there is no going on vacation for a month if you leave school for more than 15 days, regardless of what that is, that enrollment file will drop. So I just wanted to make sure that that was clear. After we stepped away, we felt like there could be some confusion, and we just wanted to not leave this hearing today without making sure that that was clear.
Thank you, Director Erickson. And I assume that also stands that if district reached out within those 15 days to the student and provided structural assistance, then that 15 days would start over again?
Madam Chair, yes. So as long as there is some educational connection, and as our government relations director, Adosh Uni, had spoken to the new law related to those connections, once those happen, then the enrollment form would re-enroll.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the clarification. And with that, members, I wanted to go to the table for questions on any of the things that we've heard or heard today. Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh. Check. Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have any questions. I just want to give thanks to those who gave their testimony. These are very excruciating, troubling times. The effects not only on the behavior of all of our children and students from public, private, charter sectors of schooling, but our administrations, our teachers, our social workers. I'm just baffled that this is the reality that we're facing. It's needed for us to pay attention and not make this partisan, and recognize in this committee where is focused on the financial impact, how much deterioration is happening in our state right now, and how much, if you don't have empathy of the morality of the mental well-being of our overall educational setting, think about the impact financially it's going to take. We've been in session for 2 weeks. The trauma from our educators has not stopped. And it sure has not stopped with our children, because I'm a mom of a child who has not been able to say, Mom, can we have better playgrounds right now as the focus of financials, but is saying, can we have our schools to feel the same again? And I can't answer that as a parent. I can't answer that as a lawmaker here. But what I can strategize on is what we can do right now, in the now, to start strategically planning and be proactive, to not just put a Band-Aid over it, but to find how we are really going to have to do surgery on these numbers. And they need to be in the best way of respecting those who gave testimony on how much trauma is happening. And we've got a long way. This isn't an overnight fix. I don't ever think of maybe we'll see a fix in our own lifetime, but our children deserve to have their dreams not be nightmares. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, any other questions, comments, thoughts? Want to leave that space. Representative Green.
I also want to thank the people who came to testify. I was particularly moved by the testimony of Clinton Ferguson and Hillary Horob, who talked about, the emotional impact and how much our social workers and our counselors are impacted by this too, and how they see, a real need for kids just to be able to be kids, to be able to run around outside. I do think we need to increase our social workers, increase the number of people we have who have direct contact with our kids, more counselors in schools, I think would help. I think we're going to be facing this kind of trauma for years to come. So I think whatever we can do to build an infrastructure that would be more supportive of our kids, less punitive, I think is the best way to go. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Rehm. With that, Representative Chair Kreisha, do you have some updates for next week?
Okay, just what's posted. So Tuesday will be an overview. I believe we have MDE and Perpich on the agenda. And then, of course, you have the gavel on Thursday. So.
Great. And Thursday we're looking at having the Minnesota Violence Project in, as well as a handful of bills. So with that, members, I'll give you some time back. We are adjourned.